You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
Grab a coffee, grab some flies out of the fly box, and let's chat real quickly about striped bass spawning, specifically striped bass in North Carolina. Probably curious why we're getting to the topic of North Carolina striped bass on Wednesday, January 7th, but there is a specific reason, and that's on January 6th out of Axios Raleigh, a article has been going around the internet called Keeping North Carolina's Only Spawning Striped Bass Population Alive. And so the core of the article, we'll let everyone, you know, feel free to look it up. It's really short. It's kind of summarized in almost a ChatGPT AI style layout with short bullets. But it talks about the Roanoke River population in North Carolina being the last remaining wild spawning population of striped bass for North Carolina. And as it goes down, talks about the depletion of coast-wide striped bass, talks about the use of spawning in stocking in North Carolina. And this is where we get one line that says by the numbers and then two bullet points. And this is what we're going to chop it up with. I'm joined here by Tony, who's going to jump in a second, but I'm going to read this really quickly to you guys. This section from the article that says by the numbers, the North Carolina Marine and Estuary Foundation has partnered with the state to stock over 5 million striped bass over the past 3 years. That's a lot of striped bass. In 2023, 97% of the Roanoke River striped bass sampled by state biologists upon reaching the Albemarle Sound had the genetic markers of hatchery fish. So 2023, we got 97% of sampled stripers having those genetic markers from stocking. In a dramatic turnaround 1 year later, so that would be 2024, only 3% of the sample was from hatchery fish, from stock fish, where they could find those genetic markers, indicating there was a relatively good wild spawn during the 2024's closed fishing season. Those numbers switching so dramatically indicates, quote, there must have been millions of wild fish that spawned in order to catch so few hatchery fish, end quote. So what the article is claiming is that the dilution of the presence of biomarkers from the stocked fish is due to the addition of so many wild fish to the population that now they've been diluted from being 3% wild fish to 97% wild fish. And that throws up a lot of red flags for someone who wants to think critically about what's going on here in the state of striped bass and the potential impacts of stocking. So I am joined here by Mr. Tony Friedrich, who's been digging into North Carolina striped bass a little bit more. Going to give us a little bit more context, a couple other data points here that should guide this discussion. And we just wanted to add, I think, a little bit of context and padding to the conversation that you will see go down in the coming days and weeks, I'm sure, with this article as it gets shared around Facebook and MySpace and AOL and whatever else people are using these days. I joke. So, Tony, really quick, 97% stocked fish down to 3% stocked fish. Are wild striped bass back? Are we saved, Tony?
No. You know, we really are not in a position where we can jump to conclusions and read an article, and especially, you know, an article that is not coming from an expert on striped bass or someone who normally would, you know, that has really no knowledge of the fishery. That's pretty clear by the article. But this is what we know. 5 million striped bass were stocked in 2022. And in 2023, when they did the sampling, 97% of the fish that were sampled had the DNA marker that showed that they were stocked. They came from the hatchery. And then 2024, only 3% that were sampled. Now, these are what's called phase one fish. They are like 5 inches or less, the ones that are being stocked. So you would have fully expected to see these fish in the sampling in year two. And again, it went from 97 to 3%. So the author of the article, I think you're right. I think this is an AI article because he clearly did not call anyone in the state agency, because I did this morning and he made the wild ass assumption that there was some incredible spawn in 2024, and magically that is why there were only 3% of those fish with the hatchery DNA. And he is completely incorrect in that assertion. When I checked the numbers, it was a poor spawn, better than catastrophically low spawns, but nowhere near what the average for that spawn has been over, you know, the course of time. So by all measure, a very poor spawn, and you go from 97% to 3%. The only thing that I wasn't able to find out was the sample size the same in 2023 and 2024? You know, were they same number of net sets? You know, all the stuff that's pretty standardized with Maryland's Young of the Year surveys. I was not able to get that information, but I can't believe that it would be that far off to cause a difference between 93%.
Yeah, I mean, so if you look at it that way, and appreciate you calling out, you know, this is maybe a piece of context that we don't have at this current point in time, but there's basically two options. Well, three, that there's the same sample size. If so, the conversation's the conversation. There's a potential that it was a greater sample size the next year when they found 3%, which even makes it, you know, more significant. And if the sample size was less, the scientific integrity of that would be that you could not make that claim, at least the claim that's in the article, right? So there's three different paths that could go, Tony, but I don't really think it changes the conversation in a major way, because if they did one sample set, so, or one seine or whatever, and it was so small in comparison to the before, then it,
Cody, listen, we're laying out all of the possible explanations for this because we operate, you know, with transparency and integrity. But the truth is that this AI, potentially AI article, was generated from a podcast that was done by some biologists in North Carolina. So I would imagine that if the sample size was vastly different, then it probably wouldn't have been on the podcast. So these are responsible biologists. These are people that are, you know, they're trying to educate the public and explain things. And, you know, I think the bottom line is this, it Occam's razor, right? It's always the simplest solution. Millions, you know, I think Texas just did like our billionth redfish stocked, and their redfish fishery is not in a great shape. And, you know, tens of 10 million plus every year in South Carolina. And, you know, they need to take a 28% reduction and won't take that and move the bar on spawning potential ratio. And, you know, I can go on and on. The interesting thing that I, you know, when I did a little bit of digging, one of the interesting things that I found out was that there has been an active striped bass stocking program in the Neuse River, which is, you know, one little river system. You know, consider it like the size of, I don't know, like Smith Mountain Lake, and or any of the lakes like in the south that stock striped bass for angling opportunity. You know, those fish that they stock, yeah, it creates a very contained fishery within the Neuse, and people do catch, you know, decent 10-15 pound stripers from it, but they have never found spawning success within the river. Never.
And that's worth throwing in, right? As far as ASGA stance, mine and your personal stance on that, which has been, we're not against, we have nothing wrong with the put and take fishery, right? So if you build a fishery like that that's contained and it's stocked, listen, no, fish aren't really booming, especially when it comes to inshore and saltwater. There's a lot of places that fish aren't on the rise, but anglers and outdoorsmen are on the rise. So any chance that we can have a footprint for anglers to be able to access pass on the tradition to the next generation, people to, you know, take something home for the table in these fisheries where, you know, you can take home stock fish. We've never been against any of that. Our stance specifically is against stock supplementation, right? So hatchery driven fish being used to supplement a wild population, especially a wild migratory, coastwide migratory population like striped bass. It's irresponsible when it comes to the amount of resources that it takes to make a spawning adult, your contribution, tracking those genetic markers and seeing how impactful those spawning really is, or the impact on the spawning population from stocking. So we are anti-stock supplementation by stockies and pro, like you just said, that Neuse River fishery. If that's a great fishery that keeps people fishing for striped bass in North Carolina using a stocking program, no harm, no foul.
Well, the harm is that some pinhead will be like, well, they do it in the Neuse, we can do it in the, and it's like, okay, look, dude, like you're basically comparing a reservoir size program, to an entire coastal migration that spans, you know, a bajillion miles of shoreline, 1,000 miles as the crow flies, and you can't do it. And not only can you not do it, you know, who's going to foot the bill? Because it's not one little river where you're throwing, you know, a million fingerlings in, and you know, 100 fishermen on the Neuse can go out and catch stripers in the winter or something. It is not the case. Like, these fish are not, they're not spawning, they're not contributing to the stock, you know. So it's like, let me get this straight. You want to do that on a coastwide scale, basically put in, you know, genetically pathetic concrete tube raised mutants, and that's fishing? That's not fishing. That's not my kind of fishing. And if you want that, we are not on the same page. We are against each other on policy. You cannot, under any circumstances, say, well, it worked here. And, you know, you get back to Canada and they'll jump up and down and say that they had a stocking program. They had a 13-year moratorium. That's what fixed the fish, right? Not some stupid stocking program. And, you know, look, make no mistake. We're doing this podcast to say that the article's incorrect. It made an assumption that there was a possibility of an awesome spawn. And that's why the numbers went from 97 to 3%. Now, look, dude, I have spent a good chunk of time in the Charleston area in South Carolina. My parents had a home there, and I caught a lot of redfish in a lot of different ways in South Carolina, as well as Louisiana and other locations. And I cannot tell you, you know, those dumb little stocky fish that they put in all congregate in the same area in the wintertime. And, you know, it is a dolphin feeding station. You know, these fish are not smart. They do not know how to avoid predators. And it is nothing short of complete management failure and capitulation and cowardice, that you don't want to lower the daily bag limit, that you don't want to face that scrutiny. So, and you know, Cody, like, if you really want to get into the nuances, what size are you stocking those fish? Because, and when are you stocking them? Because they can compete with the wild fish that will actually contribute to having more little fish, outcompete them for food if they're stocked a little bit bigger. I mean, it is a problem on a biblical scale. It has never been successful in a saltwater environment. I'm happy for anyone to prove me wrong. I double dog dare you. But it is a recognition of complete and utter management failure when you are stocking tens of millions of fish over the course of decades, every year. And when they do genetic studies, it's all under 5%. They don't even appear in the adult population. Imagine if that money that was being poured down a toilet was used for research to understand why the wild fish weren't spawning, or, I don't know, maybe don't use bait and a J hook and let a fish gag on bait. And you know, if you're planning on releasing it, just common sense stuff that fishermen know, but we need science to inform regulations. And I bring this up for one reason, because the association right now is scrambling to raise money for a minimum of two new research projects that we're not going to announce yet, because we haven't signed the contract and we're not done with working back and forth on the proposals, but two massive projects on incredibly important species that, you know, you look at it and you say, why haven't they done this yet? Why haven't the state agencies, why hasn't a federal agency done this on a fish that brings billions of dollars into the economy? Are literally a gaggle of idiots, us, that have to run around, shake trees, raise money to pay all of our staff to be able to, you know, help with the research, do all the social media stuff, write the blog articles, push it in management. Why the hell are we doing this? You know, our detractors would say morons, but we can accomplish it, and state agencies and federal agencies and regional management centers can't do it. Like, you're having meetings on spiny dogfish, wasting our time with crap like that. And you know, the point here is you're pissing money away on stock and fish that are nothing. They have the ecological significance of a hot dog. You're pissing that money away and forcing people like us to run around and beg, borrow, steal money so this research can be done in the hopes that you'll actually listen to the results.
I'm thinking of someone who's already going to clip the last 10 seconds and say that Tony Friedrich's been stealing money. So we look for that PR campaign we'll have to fight back against. But no, you know, I think you hit a couple things there. One of the things is, like, let's have these discussions with some next generation stats. Like let's take this to the next level and not just look at, are we really so soft-minded that we just look at bulk numbers? Like, can we look at that statement and go, 5 million fish, it's saved. We are saved. Because it's not about how many runts are out there. Like you said, that age class of fish that's being stocked, at least in that specific program that you referenced, those are micros, right? They're like 5, 6, 7. So it's not supporting angling economy because people aren't going out and targeting those. It's not like what we talked about, the put and take, you know, oh, well, maybe there's some broodstock being stocked here or some older class fish, and those actually can be targeted and drive some economy, drive some angling opportunity. That's not what's happening here. And what the numbers show in this article is those fish are dying, right? And we don't know exactly how they're dying, if they're not fit, if they're, you know, can't survive a certain environmental condition that's being served to them because they're tank raised or whatever, or if they're just getting gobbled up. Regardless, they're not surviving. That's why it went from 97 to 3, not because there's this biblical wild stock. So the whole point of stocking when it comes to supplementation of a population is to drive that population to produce more fish. So you have to look at these stocking numbers within the realm of how many of these fish are making it to the spawning population. So if you're stocking a bunch of 5-inch fish, that doesn't mean nothing. The whole point is that those fish eventually would make more fish if stock supplementation via stocking actually worked. And so I remember doing just running the numbers for during my undergrad for a research project or one of my classes, going through Maine IF&W at the time with what Maine was doing for Atlantic salmon, trying to keep them alive. And if you ran the numbers of how many fish they stocked in relation to how many multi-sea winter adults, right? So those smolted salmon that, you know, they smolt to their river, they're a Penobscot fish, and then they go out to the ocean for a couple of years before they return. If you looked at how many returning adults, and then you divided it by the actual resources and numbers being spent, or the other way around for the division, it was like hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars per an individual fish, Tony. I don't have the exact number in front of me. I want to say it was $400,000 that we got to. It was like, oh, the state in this year spent $400,000 per single returning fish. So you actually have to think critically about this. You can't say 10 million fish stocked, we saved it. Because if you had to bring into a whiteboard and pitch constituents of a state to support a campaign or to, you know, show a politician, you're going to show them in 2025, we put out 5 million fish and everyone's going to clap. But if you add on that whiteboard, in 2025, we spent, and I'm making up arbitrary numbers, $20 million, and we earmarked that only, you know, 47 fish were adults that we marked. You start doing the math there, and the spend is egregious. So the finance side of it doesn't make sense. And then also, while you were talking, Tony, I was almost thinking, it's using these, I love the phrase tank scrubber, right? It's just kind of funny. But using these tank scrubber fish, these fish that were, you know, born and raised to try to mimic a wild fish, it's almost a little bit disrespectful. I mean, look at to the fish itself. Look at the research that MassDMF has done and how they've charted. It's incredible that striped bass like go back to the same population, subpopulation. All right, you know, they go back to the Chesapeake every year, and then these same fish return to the Elbow off Cape Cod, or, you know, this point off Connecticut or whatever, and they, you know, they stage before this cohort stages below the Cape Cod Canal and then funnels through, spends a summer in Boston Harbor, then returns back. The migration that these fish do annually is so incredible, and we should have so much more respect for it. And so raising something in an aquarium, throwing it in and saying, go buddy, good luck, it is pretty disrespectful to underestimating what our wild striped bass do, and then just assuming something that just swam and just, it's a NASCAR fish. It just took all left turns for the, you know, last 6 months of its life or whatever while being raised. Just assuming that it's going to jump into the population and catch the vibe and go is a little disrespectful to the fish.
Well, the other thing is the human dimension aspect of it. So generally speaking, when these massive stocking exercises go, it's because they don't want to take a reduction in harvest. So they're using this, you know, tank scrubber as an excuse to not take management action. And then it goes, you kind of get stuck in a funnel, and it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And then you rely on this, you know, boondoggle that is, you know, costing too much money, not getting any results. And the whole time it's, you know, it's all these clowns that don't want to do the right thing via management. So I think our fear is fit. Like, one, you're giving up on striped bass when you stock these little mutant little goofballs. And two, you're giving the cadre of idiots a platform to say, no, we don't need reductions. Look at how many fish we're stocking. And you're like, well, if natural mortality for a wild fish at that age is 20% and natural mortality for a stocked fish at that age is 80%, you know, it's not doing anything. So you're not solving the problem. And I think it's clear as day, unless some information comes out that changes my mind, and we wouldn't have got on the podcast. Like, I made the right calls. I did the right kind of stuff before we got on the podcast. And there is no indication, first of all, that there was some biblical spawn that would have outsized these numbers, or that, you know, the survey was changed to where they wouldn't intercept these fish. I don't think the guys would have been talking about it. So what does that leave you? That leaves you a lot of dumb little fish that the other wild fish ate, you know? Yeah. But that's it. I mean, there's a lot fish of, it's a pretty violent, you know, it's a pretty violent ecosystem, the water. It's the wildest place left on Earth.
Right. So you see them small swimming around, and we say, cool, those are small striped bass, right? They are a smaller version of what we like to chase to catch, whether that's for the table or to release or everywhere in between, right? Like, they're a smaller versions of a big striped bass. You know what they are when they're 5 inches? They're food to just about everything else, right? So that's what, when we talk about redfish and stuff, I mean, the joke down here in Florida is like, you know, nice, they released all the stockling, little hatchling redfish or sea trout or whatever. Like, all the dolphins within a 1 mile radius are going to be super excited. They'll be punting them around like a, you know, an NFL kicker. So what this podcast is, we'll put a bow on this because we're right about 25 minutes. But what this podcast is just ammo for people who participate in these conversations to keep the conversations honest. If you listen this far, you made this, you have this context now. Not everyone has the luxury like Tony has to be able to, hey, I know who this researcher is, I know who this state representative is, I'm going to make a call. Some people do, some people don't. But like, these, we need to keep these conversations honest. And something like this, I've already seen it shared 4 or 5 different groups and pages and people share, whatever. There was no wild biblical spawn in North Carolina that saved the day. And we all just need to be a little bit better about not taking a headline for what it is. I mean, this is a hilarious little closing point, Tony. I'm trying to get that Axios article to open. But if you look at the caption for the header photo, it says something along the lines of, "This is a striped bass that was landed in Maine. Does anyone have a photo of one from North Carolina? Please send it to us."
So not a recent one.
We'll leave it at that. There's no better bow to put on this conversation than if someone has a striped bass photo, please send it to that author, and then maybe have an honest conversation with them about what these numbers mean. So go forth and prosper, our stewards of striped bass conservation and striped bass conversations, both digital and in person. And we appreciate you stopping by the guidepost for a quick chat here.